Okay, welcome back. We'll be exploring some frontier topics within effective altruism over the course of the next hour. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Casper Osterheld. Casper studied computer science at the University of Bremen. Going all the way back to middle and high school, he completed a year's worth of university-level courses in math at the University of Hamburg. He has published in the journal Synthes, and his research includes decision theory, theoretical computer science, and artificial intelligence. He's here to speak to us about cooperation across the multiverse. Please welcome Casper Osterheld.
Thanks. Okay. So in this talk, I'm going to give a brief introduction to an admittedly somewhat exotic idea called multiverse-wide cooperation via correlated decision-making. The idea is based on a particular view about decision theory, and so I'm going to start by just introducing that view and how it contrasts with competing views. I'll then discuss whether this view has implications for how humans should interact with each other on Earth, and I'll sort of tentatively say usually not, and I'll then argue that this view does have implications for effective altruists who believe that they live in a large universe or multiverse of some sort. So here's a famous decision problem called, for unimportant historical reasons, the prisoner's dilemma. And it's a game between two agents, both of which are assumed to be purely self-interested. And they play this game once. Afterward, they sort of part ways and never meet each other again. And they cannot communicate or sort of make commitments or something like that before making their decision. And they face a choice between two options. And the first option is to increase their own payoff by $2, so they can take some money out of some resource pool. Or they can give $3 to the other agent. And so both agents now have to decide which of these to pick. And the standard game theory way of reasoning about this is to say, okay, whatever the other agent does, it's better if I take $2 for myself. So even if the other agent is nice and gives me $3, I'm still better off taking the $2. So I should just take the $2. And this is sort of unfortunate because then if both players reach this conclusion, they end up worse than if they have both given each other $3. So now let's consider a variation of this prisoner's dilemma. It's basically the same game, but now the two agents are assumed to be exact copies of each other. So let's start by assuming that they're really sort of atom by atom copies of each other. Now there seem to be two different ways of reasoning about what to do in this decision problem. The first is supported by causal decision theory, which is a general theory about how to make instrumentally rational decisions. And basically it just says that you should reason about this problem in the same way that you reason about the problem against the prisoner's dilemma against a non-copy of you. And so basically you say, okay, I can't causally affect what the other agent does, so I'm just going to take $2 because no matter what the other agent does, taking $2 is better than giving the $3 because it gives me additional $2. Okay, so that's causal decision theory. And here's the second way of reasoning about this problem. So you could say, if I take $2 for myself, then my copy will also, because they're an exact copy of me, take $2 for themselves. Whereas if I give $3, then the copy will also give $3. And so if I give $3, I'll have more money. I'll have $3 rather than just $2. And so giving $3 is the rational option, according to this line of reasoning. And so this reasoning was called super-rationality by Douglas Hofstadter, and this is the term that I'm going to use for this type of reasoning. It is supported by a few different sort of general theories of instrumentally rational decision making. In academic decision theory, the best known one is evidential decision theory, and another one is functional decision theory, which has been proposed by researchers at MIRI. And these sort of differ in some ways that aren't really important for this talk, but sort of both of these and a few others support this super rational line of reasoning. And this is the idea that I'm going to propose is based on the assumption of this line of reasoning. So I'm going to assume that super rationality basically works, or that you should reason like this in these types of problems. I won't give any sort of further justification for this claim, just because I don't have the time, unfortunately. But if this talk convinces you that this difference between these two views matters, then all of these references given here are good starting points for thinking about whether super rationality is the right way to reason about these types of problems. I should also mention that super rationality not only works in cases of playing against an exact atom by atom copy of you. So imagine you play against a copy of you that has slightly different childhood memories. Then if these childhood memories don't affect the way you reason about this type of decision problem, then super rationality, so the super rational line of argument would still work. So you would still say, okay, if I give the $3, then the other version with a slightly different childhood memories would also almost certainly still give the $3, and so that gives me a higher payoff. There are some clarifications that I think it is important to make. So these are common confusions, I believe, about how super rationality works, or how a causal decision theory and these alternatives differ. So the first is that super rationality is not about caring intrinsically about others. So the idea is not that the other agent gains more by these $3 than I gain from getting $2. In this prisoner's dilemma, it is assumed that you don't care about the other agent. And so for super rationality to work, you don't have to care about other agents. So that's kind of not the point of super rationality. The point is that by giving $3, you get more for yourself. So the second clarification is that this difference of opinion is not about beliefs about how the world works. So it's, for example, it's not that causal decision theorists have a strong belief that determinism is false and that it's possible for two atom-by-atom copies to make different decisions. And conversely, evidential decision theorists don't believe that you have some magical way of causally influencing what the copy decides. So it's not that that one of these two that sort of one of these two views is based on some sort of belief about the world that one could test, but it's about how we use our beliefs to make decisions. So, for example, how we use our knowledge about causality to make decisions. And the third clarification that I would like to make is that super rationality is not about reputation or tit for tat. So, in real world decision problems, sort of a typical reason to be nice to others is that they will see that you've been nice, and others may also see that you've been nice, and so others will think more highly of you if you've behaved nicely, and may reward you for your sort of friendliness. But super rationality is not based on this idea. So it's really super rationality is really about sort of getting more money in this particular decision problem without thinking about how this may affect sort of in some weird or like complex causal way how future agents or like how other agents will treat you in the future, basically. Here's another example in which super rationality can be applied if it works at all. So basically, this is like the prisoner's dilemma. So again, each agent can either take money for themselves or give a slightly higher sum to some other agent. But now the agent that you can benefit is not the agent that can benefit you. And so usually this kind of reciprocity is very important to cooperation. But for super rationality, it doesn't really matter that much. So you would still reason that if I give my sort of successor on this list or this graph $3, then my predecessor, because they're in a sort of symmetric situation, they will also give me $3, and so I'm better off than if I take $2 for myself. Okay, so this was the short introduction to super rationality and sort of this reasoning about the prisoner's dilemma and these two views. Now the natural question to ask seems to be, does this matter? Are there any situations where you sort of actually would make a different decision if you believe that super rationality works? I mean, like, all these versions with exact copies are like pretty hypothetical, and so so why care about this difference? And so first, I would like to discuss the question of whether this difference matters for how humans should interact with each other on Earth. And this is a question that has been discussed quite a bit by academic decision theorists. And one fairly extreme position on this question has been defended by Gary Drescher. And he argues that a wide range of altruistic behaviors can be justified with super rationality purely on the basis of self-interest. And so here's the idea. So imagine you see someone drowning, and you're purely selfish, and you could now save this person from drowning, but doing so would waste time, and it would ruin your clothes or whatever. And we also assume that there are no laws that sort of force you to help that person and so on. Then usually one would say, okay, if one is self-interested, one shouldn't save that person. But now Drescher would argue that if you now save this person, you make it more likely that when others are in similar situations, they would also make sort of the same decision and help people who are in desperate need of help. And there's some chance that sometime in the future you will be sort of in this position in which you need desperate help. So if you might be drowning or something like that. And so by helping that person, you make it more likely that you will be helped in these kind of situations. And because it is more important to be safe from drowning than it is to not ruin your clothes, you should save that person purely on the basis of self-interest. I think this is a quite interesting line of argument, but I don't think it's actually very persuasive in the real world. And the reason is that if you think about these kinds of situations, so about the problem of whether to save someone from drowning or not, with this weird super rationality stuff that very few people have thought about, then you think about this problem in a very different way than most others. So it may be wrong to assume that you saving this person now sort of actually makes it more likely that others will save you when you're in such a situation. Another decision problem that is typically discussed as a case in which super rationality may matter is the paradox of voting. So the paradox of voting makes the point that for egoists, it isn't really prudent to vote in large elections. And the reason is that the probability that their vote will affect the outcome of the election is just very small. And even if sort of this unlikely event occurs in which their vote determines the outcome of the election, the impact on their welfare is so small that in expectation, the effect or the value of voting is very small and probably smaller than the opportunity costs of going outside and so on. But now, as super rationalists would argue that this is kind of the wrong way to reason about the wrong way to reason about this kind of situation. So they would say, you should also take into account that if you don't vote, others who reason about the decision whether to vote or not in the same way that you reason about it would also not vote. And it may be that this sort of the fraction of people in the electorate who reason about this decision in the same way that you reason about it is small, but because the number of people who are eligible to vote is so large in at least some elections, it seems quite plausible to assume that some people will reason about this question in the same way that you reason about it. And so super rationalists would say you should take that into account. So here we have a situation in which it seems quite plausible that super rationality at least implies that you should think about a situation differently. It's not that clear whether it sort of actually implies a different decision. So for one, it might still be that for the reasons that I outlined before, the fraction of people who reason about this type of situation in the same way that you do is so small that it's still extremely unlikely that whether you vote or not makes a difference. And also, it's not really clear what parties or candidates these other people vote for. So it could be that if you vote, there's sort of a significantly higher number of votes overall, but it's unclear in which direction you push the outcome of the election. Nonetheless, I think that the paradox of voting, or like this decision problem of voting in large elections, and the suggestion that super rationality matters in this case, is sort of interesting because it uses a particular trick for making super rationality relevant. And that trick is we make the set of agents who face a particular decision problem so large that it is basically guaranteed that some of these will reason about the problem in the same way that I reason about the problem. And so I think it's interesting to think more about how whether there's sort of other versions or other applications of this trick that lead to situations in which super rationality is sort of really clearly relevant. And this is why I think super rationality matters, especially if you believe that you're in a large universe or a multiverse of some sort. So modern physics suggests that some kind of theory, that we live in some kind of very large universe. So, for example, we might just live in a spatially infinite universe, or the average interpretation of quantum mechanics might be true. But the probability that one of these things is true, one of these things that imply that we live in a large universe or multiverse, the probability seems quite high, and if we live in such a large universe, it is basically guaranteed that there are many agents and many civilizations and so on, which in turn basically guarantees that there are many agents who reason about super rationality and these kind of things in the same way that I, for example, reason about it. And for egoists, many people in general, this fact doesn't really matter. So they may agree with super rationality, and they may agree with the multiverse stuff, but they may say, okay, well, I could now theoretically take into account that if I make this choice, then in other parts of the multiverse, some other agents will also make this choice. But in practice, what choices other people in other parts of the multiverse make will never affect me or my country or whatever, just because they're too far away. And so I can sort of systematically ignore all of this stuff. But this is an effective altruism conference, and so I expect that many of us care about, for example, sentient beings wherever they are. So we also care about the sentient beings in other parts of the multiverse. And so for us, it seems more plausible that super rationality and sort of correlated decision-making stuff makes a difference if we believe that we live in a large universe or multiverse. And so here's a sort of model situation in which it might matter. So imagine you're, just for concreteness sake, a classical utilitarian, so you have this sort of particular value system. And for some reason, you're in a situation in which it's you're in a particularly bad position to optimize for your own values. So for some reason, you just can't do this very well right now. And for some reason, you're in a really good position to benefit some other value system. So let's say you're in a really good position to make the world more just, but in a way that you as a classical utilitarian don't care about at all. Then usually you would say, okay, I mean, obviously, I'm still going to try to increase welfare or stuff like that, like the welfare of well-being of animals and humans and stuff like that, because I just don't care about making the world more just in this particular way. But if you take super rationality and the multiverse into account, you might think about this differently. You might say, okay, there are all these other agents who are some of which reason about this type of decision in the same way that I reason about it. And some of these are in sort of symmetric decisions toward my value system. So they have the choice between benefiting their own values very ineffectively or very effectively benefiting my values. And then it's maybe better if I make my world more just, even though I don't really care about this particular intervention, to make it more likely that in other parts of the multiverse, other people will take the really effective classical utilitarian interventions. Here's a more practical example. So I won't give all the caveats on this, but so here's the basic idea. So imagine again that you have some particular value system. I'll just take a classical utilitarianism again. And imagine that you have the choice to, or you have the option to invest some amount of time to convince someone that classical utilitarianism is the right moral view. Again, you would usually think, yeah, that's a good thing. As long as you don't have to invest too much time, it's probably good. But now, again, if you think about the multiverse and super rationality, you might say, okay, if I convince this person of classical utilitarianism now, then all of the people in the multiverse who reason about these kinds of things in the same way that I reason about them would also try to convince people of their values. And so there's this kind of multiverse-wide tug of war between different value systems, and everyone tries to convince everyone else of their values. And if you sort of join this tug of war on your side, then you also make it more likely that others will join on the other side, or other sides, I guess. And so joining this tug of war just means that there's sort of overall more pull on this rope, but it doesn't pull the rope into any particular direction that you could predict. And so it becomes, at least some forms of moral advocacy become less attractive for this reason. Okay, so obviously there's a lot more to say about this, and there's if you're interested, you can go to foundationalresearch.org/MSR. So there are a few other introductory resources on this idea, and also some in-depth discussions about particular objections and what practical implications all of this has. Thanks.
Thank you, Casper. So we're going to run questions, as always, through the app. You can submit questions right through the Bizabo app or go on the web to london.eaglobal.org/polls. London.eaglobal.org/polls. So one question that I was kind of wrestling with sitting here is there a mechanism? I mean, the sort of structure of the argument seems to be, if you are purely selfish, you'll do this. But then if you think about kind of other people in your same situation, even if they're sort of distant from you and you can't affect them and they can't affect you, then somehow there seems to be some sort of causal relationship. But I'm struggling to kind of pair the implied causal nature of my thinking things through involving super rationality with the other understanding that I have, which is that I can't actually cause anything for these people in these distant parts of the multiverse. So what am I missing there?
Yeah, so there are different views on this question. So some who would say that one should cooperate in the prisoner's dilemma against the copy or give the $3, some of these people would say that there is no causal, or that it's sort of wrong to view this relationship as causal, and that there is no causal mechanism, and that you should give them the $3 because that gives you evidence that the other agent also gave $3. So if a friend observes you giving $3, they would infer that the copy of you also gave $3, and that this is sort of the way to reason about it. And so this doesn't involve any kind of causal mechanism at all. But there are also other views where you introduce some sort of new, like somewhat awkward, views about causality. Like you could think about logical causation, and then you could say sort of my choosing to give $3 logically causes the other agent to also give the $3, or you identify with some non-physical entity that can sort of logically cause all of these all of the copies of you to make a particular choice. So there are different views about like whether there's a mechanism or not, or what the right way to think about this is. And I'm relatively agnostic about this, I would say. Also because it doesn't seem to, or some of these views basically make the same recommendations.
Is there a role for free will in this? I mean, I think probably most of us have some inclination to believe determinism would be true. But this again seems to sort of say, okay, you're kind of thinking of it, and there seems to be this sort of, middle moment where you have the freedom to choose, and if you choose a certain way, then things will happen another way. So just my free will, alarm is going off in a major way. Am I missing something there, or does this sort of imply some role of truly free will?
This is something that a lot of people bring up when they discuss Newcomb's problem, which is sort of a variation of this prisoner's dilemma against a copy. So I think basically that, so I'm a compatibilist, so I say I believe that determinism is compatible with free will. Which I think is also, I think, the most common view among professional philosophers. I guess to many people this is counterintuitive, but so I sort of think about it like this. I can sort of really choose. But it's also already determined what I do. It's just that I don't know what sort of my physical structure implies about what I will choose, and also sort of I am this physical structure, so it's totally fine if that physical structure sort of determines what I will do. I guess this is not the kind of thing that one could clear up in such a short...
Not in the course of a five-minute Q&A, yeah. Anyway.
Sorry.
Some of these questions in and of themselves may be too much for a five-minute Q&A. Here's one that might be somewhat tractable. Is there a reason to dismiss the possibility of agents elsewhere in the multiverse who are sort of opposed to me in terms of my, you know, value system or whatever, such that if I reason this way, then they maybe will also reason this way, but sort of cancel me out in the end anyway?
Agents that always make opposite decisions.
Ah, okay. So, that's... did you write the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. like agents that always make opposite decisions to me.
Is yeah.
Could I believe in those, and might they cancel out the effect of agents that always make the same decisions?
Yeah, I guess in principle it's possible to believe in these agents, and there's sort of possible world in some sense where something like this happens. But I would guess that sort of evolutionary pressures just ensure that most agents tend to be similar rather than sort of exact opposites of each other in some ways.
Building on your mention of natural selection, one questioner asks, wouldn't evolution by natural selection select for heuristics that lead to super rationality without necessarily explicitly reasoning about it? I guess that sounds a little bit like group selection, but that may not be quite the right interpretation of the question.
Yeah. It's a good point, and in principle, evolution does select for these kind of, or like at least some sort of limited version of super rationality. I guess the reason why we don't really, a lot of people have the intuition that one should cooperate in a prisoner's dilemma against a copy, so it's not clear to, And some decision theorists even argue that a lot of our cooperative intuitions are sort of related to super-rationality. I personally think that on Earth, super-rationality just usually doesn't matter, and so we don't really have any explicit intuitions for it. So, for example, on Earth, there's a lot of sort of tit-for-tat-based cooperation where... I scratch your back and you scratch mine and stuff like that. This kind like seems super rationality might just not be necessary for might not be necessary given that there are these other more reliable, I guess, options to ensure cooperation.
So we're just about out of time. Won't be able to get to all the questions, but you'll be at office hours. So
yes.
Those that didn't get the questions asked can come ask them directly. One more for now. The questioner asks, it seems like accepting the super rationality view that you've presented would lead almost exactly to a sort of Kantian ethical system where people sort of universalize their maximum. Looks like you agree.
Yes. So, in a way, I guess. So Drescher also makes this point that basically super rationality sort of leads to Kantian ethics. I guess one can view it that way. Yes, it's a good point.
Where can people follow you online to learn more from you?
I have a blog, kasperösterheld.com or kasperösterheld or whatever. you can subscribe to that if you're interested. I sometimes post about decision theory and sometimes about multiverse-wide super-rationality and sometimes also about somewhat other unrelated stuff, though mostly about EA-related topics.
Thank you. How about a warm round of applause for Kasper Osterheld?